I'm going to tell you a little bit about this huge, the National Science Foundation had the synchrotron radiation center in trouble twice.
Okay.
And the first time you probably know, and that's when they were trying to build this facility. And they were installing the new microtron injector. Mm-hmm. The microtron injector had its advantage in that its price was about $1 million rather than the LINAC, which would have been 21 to 25 million.
And what was the LINAC?
LINAC, L-I-N-A-C. And that's how most of the synchrotron radiation centers operate. It's the injector machine that puts the electrons into the storage ring itself.
Okay.
And the idea of the microtron was that it would be cheaper.
So what would be the primary difference between the two?
Cost was the main difference, and they figured that the current could be the same. And the difficulty was when the thing was built, you could inject electrons, a certain number of electrons at maybe 100 million electron volts, but you had to accelerate it up to 840 million or 1,000. And when they tried to accelerate it up to the higher energy, they lost the beam.
Okay.
And that continued for 2.5 years or so. And they couldn't figure out why. And the National Science Foundation decided that if we couldn't make the current more than a couple of milliamps, that it wasn't worth continuing the ring. And so they cut off funding. And Irv Shane, who was chancellor at that time, took $1 million from WARF, Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, and essentially said to the individuals out here, do you think you can make the thing work? And we brought in Keith Simon, who was a theoretical physicist from physics, and another person whose name I've now forgotten. he's since dead, but both of them began working with the people out here, and they found that there was a resonance as you went from 100 million electron volts to 110. At 108 or 106, everything disappeared.
Yeah.
So now the microtron is operated at 108 or 110 million electron volts, so you get around that resonance.
Okay.
So that was the first time that NSF thought about turning it off. And they figured out the problem, they made the microtron work, we went back to the National Science Foundation, and they refunded us. The second time, I think, was in 1997. And the National Science Foundation felt as if the ring was decaying. The user base was getting smaller. The interesting research seemed to be going down. At about that time, the graduate school stepped in, and I was on one of the committees that reviewed the synchrotron radiation center's future, and they said, would you take it over and would you turn it around? So in 1997, I became the director of the ring. The major thing that I did was, it's kind of encompassed in this, one of the things was that we put together this.
Okay.
When Franz Hempsel and I went to the National Science Foundation to talk with the people about future funding, we saw beautiful glossy brochures of all of the other rings in the United States, and there was nothing from the SRC.
Okay.
Now, they have professional writers who put together all of this. And what the National Science Foundation was doing was picking up some of the things that were described in those glossy reports and telling them to Congress as a justification for future funding. And so Franz and I came back, and so instead of doing an annual report, which would have been this thick, we decided to do this highlights. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the first innovations. And if you notice these things, they're short. And I'm going to leave this with you. I want it back.
Okay.
Leave this with you. You can see they're just a page.
Yeah.
And these are called nuggets. And the idea is that if you can describe why it's important and give a picture, that this can be presented as a PowerPoint slide by the National Science Foundation to the congressional representatives. And they can see firsthand then why funding should continue.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things. The second thing is that when we put together the proposal, this was in 1999, I went back and tried to get the users really committed to the facility. They had gotten kind of discouraged and disappointed. And so we had several meetings with the users off campus. They were held in a hotel in Chicago, for example. Two of them were kind of a central meeting place where they could come together and we could really talk about issues and we could talk about those things that would make the center better. So then we started constructing the proposal to the foundation, which was really, really critical. And we sent the proposal out to the advisory committee. We sent the proposal out to key users and had them review it and make recommendations and come back to us. And then we put together another draft proposal and sent that out again to say, have we find some of the issues. And we also tried to put a focus for the center. What would we be known for? What are the key things that would define the SRC? And then finally, and this was the most controversial thing of all, previous reviews had gone over time again and again, and they all looked disjointed. Each person would present their thing, and then another one would present their thing, and it wasn't coordinated. So what we decided to do was to make all of the presentations to have a common format with the SRC, with the fact that it was the review, that it was a synchrotron radiation center in Madison. Here's the person who was presenting it, and here was the institution. Oh. Every one of these has that sort of thing on it.
Yeah.
And so when the reviewers came, we presented this whole book to them and a disc that had all of this on it. Because we knew that when they began to write their review, instead of trying to copy things down, they could go to the disk, cut and paste,
yeah,
and put it in the review.
And the reviewers were people from the NSF?
These were people from all over the United States, and there may be a list of the reviewers that will show you where they came from. I don't know if this has it in it. It looks like it's stuck. And you get loose. It may have a list of reviewers in it.
Look at facts.
Now these were just the some additional material. We may not have the reviewers that went through this, but Esther can provide that for you because
it's
in the minutes. But these were from all over the United States. And the person who was the chair of the committee was from Argonne, from the radiation facility there. And one of the things that I insisted on was listening to every talk before it was presented. Now, that didn't go over well. These were experienced people. They had done this many times before, but it was extremely critical to me that we be on time. And at the end of nearly 8 hours of presentations, we were over 5 minutes. Now, I can't tell you how important that was to the reviewers, because when these things go on, they're 2 hours late or 3 hours late, you don't get to dinner, you don't get your breaks on time, you don't have a chance to talk about this stuff. Holding that time was a major thing, and the committee really was very, very, very pleased with what we were proposing. The focus was probably in one of the first slides that Florence Simpson gave. Here is our focus.
Yeah.
Two things. So we weren't accused of scattering all over the place. Here are two things. And each person said, I fit in this category, this is what we're doing, and this is how it's coordinated. So I think when you think about the history of the thing, you need to know that it works when you show a focus and when you have some way of coordinating all of the research so that it makes sense to the reviewer. So you might want to keep this and look through it.
Certainly.
The graduate school still has a copy of this in their library in Basco. So.
Is this an annual? Did you make one of these each year, or?
No. Normally, well, previously, we were funded for 5 years. And then the National Science Foundation cut it to 3. Mm-hmm. So every 3 years, they would come back and review.
Okay.
But we were facing a slowdown and a phase-out when we put this proposal together. So when we got funding, I was ready to retire. I retired in 2001, and Joe Bisignano became the director of the center in 2001.
So your career here was 97 to 2001?
No. I did my first research in 1968 at the Tantalus facility.
All right.
It was photoionization mass spectrometry, very, very low current, very, very low signals.
Photoionization
mass spectrometry, using photons to provide the ions. When Dave Huber went to Washington, I was the director 90 to 91 also. I brought this along because I can't remember this stuff. Yeah, I was the director from 90 to 91 and also from...
The director of...
Here.
Okay.
And then 97 to 2001.
And how long did you work at Tantalus?
Well, essentially until this place became operational, then I moved over here. And I don't remember for sure when Aladdin was operational. I was trying to... Part of what I was looking for, there was a National Academy study that created Aladdin. The study, and you'll have to ask Esther for it, it's a little orange booklet about like that, not this high. The National Science Foundation formed a committee to study whether they should invest. And at that time, Stanford had essentially an accelerator, but didn't have a ring. And Brookhaven didn't have a ring. And we had Tantalus, but we didn't have Aladdin. And so the recommendation of the committee was essentially to build all three. And I was on the committee, and I was a representative from Wisconsin. And that's how I got the G.J. Lapierre Award. You know about the G.J. Lapierre Award?
No.
Let's see. Turn off your recorder and I'll go show it to you.
Okay.